didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another regular season officially underway here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 24 of the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Leading off, we've got Greg Cosell and Chalk Talk, where this week we've got our first opponent preview as we prepare for the Eagles matchup against the Atlanta Falcons. But we're not just talking about the Falcons. We're talking about just, in general, some broad topics there as we prepare for the matchup. So we'll talk about some stretch run game. We'll talk about the 4-3 under. We'll talk about cover three. We'll talk about, obviously, some Eagles-related topics as well. But a great discussion here with Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Next, we've got two technique, Eric Rowe and press coverage, the rookie second-round pick. Obviously, he's going to have a big impact on the secondary this year. Really interested to hear what you guys think about our discussion with Eric Rowe. And then Saturday scouting. Little different this week. We don't have an actual guest, but we will talk to my favorite guy in the room, and I'm going to bring him in now, Brian Thomas, college football fan extraordinaire. He turned me on to A.J. Derby, the tight end from Arkansas last year. And I really want to hear later on in the show, Brian, if there were any players that caught your eye this weekend.
I have an A.J. Derby moment from
you
this
do.
Weekend.
Okay, let's save it, though.
We call that a tease in the business.
That's right. So we'll get to that in our Saturday scouting segment. But let's welcome it in, BT. Let's get started, man. We've got the preseason's over, so now you're feeling a little bit better. I think after the holiday weekend, you're a little bit more at ease.
First Saturday, Sunday off in month and a half, something like that. So
sure.
since mid July, so it felt good to kind of put a cap on it. It was a great preseason.
Yep.
Saw a lot from the team, but now let's get to the real thing.
Are you going to Atlanta?
I am going to Atlanta. The ATL.
Are you excited?
I am excited. I'm actually going to be doing your position. I think I'm doing your position now down there. So I've been down there a couple times, so it's not my first time down there, but it's always great to go down there. It's like New York of the South. So everyone will be down
there.
I've
never heard it called that.
It's the New York of the South. If I had to give it a name. So it's fun town, and I know they're going to be excited for the Falcons, the whole rise up. I hope they're, I hope they're done with that campaign.
The atmosphere down there is always fun.
I love the dome. I like the dome. I know people are – I'm not a big fan of turf and domes, but I think they do it well. I think New Orleans, does it well. So I'm excited to see what their team looks like. I know it's a new coach, new regime. So.
No question.
It's going to be a test. Everybody's expecting us to maybe go down there and dominate. I don't like to go down into any game with any expectations. Take it one series at a time and see how the team does.
It's week one, so every team is fresh right
now.
Every
team 0-0. Yeah. I don't know why people put these monikers that this team should do this and this team should do. You don't know what injuries and what things might happen. And Matt Ryan's a good quarterback, so I'm excited to see how our defense plays.
Yeah, if you've got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, you're in pretty good shape. But we're going to talk about that very much in depth here with Greg Cosell. Let's get into it. Let's start it off with Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Here now for Chalk Talk is NFL Film Senior Producer Greg Cosell, joining us once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Greg, the regular season is here.
I am so happy about that, Fran.
Yes, no question. We talked about last week how excited we are for that to be here. So let's get into our first opponent preview. The Eagles play the Falcons this week, and for fans that... Let's start on the defensive side of the ball. For fans that don't have a good understanding of what a Dan Quinn, a Gus Bradley, what is ultimately a Pete Carroll defense right now looks like, what can we expect? It starts, I guess, up front with that 4-3 under front.
Yeah, it's a 4-3 under front, which means usually, of course, with an under front that the three technique tackle is on the weak side of the offensive formation. But it's a 4-3 cover three. It's a predictable defense. It's what we call an execution defense. They don't beat you with scheme, with tactics, with a lot of detailed conceptual premises. They beat you with execution of basic concepts. And we know cover three, there's a single high safety, and then there's two corners who can line up, and sometimes they play man technique depending on whether how they want to play it. Oftentimes to the boundary or the short side of the field, they'll play man. But essentially, it's a 4-3 under with cover three behind it, and it's relatively predictable to attack. Now, Dan Quinn came from Seattle. When you have big-time defenders that are fast and smart, they execute it obviously at a really high level. The Falcons don't have those same level of athletes and players. So they'll still play cover three. They played it almost always throughout the preseason because they needed to practice it.
Right.
But they don't have the same quality of players that Dan Quinn had in Seattle.
Yeah, so just looking personnel-wise, you've got at the cornerback position, and Desmond Trufant, a former first-round pick, he missed the entire preseason. It didn't play a game. Came back to practice about a week ago. So he's your left corner. At right corner, they ideally, I think, would like Jalen Collins to be that guy.
And he fits.
Yes, he fits what they would like. He's a big physical guy.
Very uneven preseason.
Yes, very much so. So you've got Collins there on the right side. He's been up and down. Phillip Adams has filled in here and there. It looks like potentially it could be Robert Alford, who doesn't have the size that they want. You would think ideal in an ideal situation, pie in the sky here, he's their nickel guy. He comes in and plays in the slot. But it looks like he might earn that starting job out of the gate.
Right, because they don't really that would only be because, as you said, Jalen Collins is not ready.
Right.
But Collins was drafted in the second round clearly because he fits the profile of a Dan Quinn corner. He fits the profile of pretty much everybody looking for a corner these days because he's almost 6'2". He's long. He can run. You know, as I said, he struggled a bit here and there in the preseason. It looked like he had to get up to pace with sort of the speed of the NFL game. There were times he looked a little lackadaisical, I thought. I'm sure you saw the same thing.
Yep.
But he clearly has the physical traits and the length you look for in a Dan Quinn cover three corner.
So one of the questions I keep getting on Twitter is, and it's a valid question, I think, you know, if you haven't watched them, is why, if you're a Dan Quinn defense, and you're playing a lot of zone coverage where the corners are backing off and you're kind of getting off into your zone, why do you want those big physical corners if all you're doing is if you're asking your corners to turn and kind of face the sideline here, play back to the sideline, and play in zone coverage? What is the thinking there?
Well, there's two elements to that. One is, even though their foundation is cover three, oftentimes to the boundary they will match up man-to-man and then play zone to the field. So the corner to the boundary will actually play physical press man-to-man coverage, almost zero man to some degree. So you want a big physical corner for that.
Right.
But the other element there is it's not just being big, and you don't necessarily have to be physical. They want length because
yes.
Length helps you play deep balls and play a lot of different kinds of throws. It's just like teams want tall receivers.
Right.
If you have tall corners, I mean, look, Jalen Collins is not Richard Sherman, but when you watch Richard Sherman play, there's a comfort level with Sherman where he often seems to let a receiver almost run by him a little bit. Not to the point where he's totally beaten, but he knows he can stay close enough on the inside hip and use his length and his arm length to knock down deep balls. That's what tall corners give you.
And so if you're 32 and a half inch arms, let's say, and you run a 4.5, you might make up for the fact that, as opposed to like a guy that's got 31 inch arms and runs a 4.4, that you're kind of making up the difference there because you've got the length to catch up at the
catch point. I'll give you a perfect example, and I know you watch this guy on film. They just cut Kevin White from Texas A&M.
Right. Yes.
Who's, in my view, when I watched him on film, I thought he was a very good player.
And he played a lot of snaps for them in the preseason as a slot corner early in games.
Right, right. He's 5'9".
Yes.
Now, he could end up somewhere in the league, and who knows, he may even have a career in the league. But he just, when all said and done, and they have to go through their list of what they want with corners, even though this kid is a quick player and has a chance to be a good NFL player, he doesn't fit how they want to play.
Right.
So they're looking for length.
Exactly. So now let's look at the safety position. You've got a pair of safeties back there. In Ricardo Allen, the converted corner.
A converted corner from Purdue.
Okay, so you know he's got the ability to run. He can play sideline to sideline as their quote-unquote free safety. And then you've got William Moore, a former second-round pick out of Mizzou, who's going to be that Cam Chancellor-type enforcer
Correct.
Underneath. So for when the rest of the league is looking for interchangeable safeties, guys that can play over the slot and, you know, can play deep and single high and can play with range, this system is one of the few left that can allow defenses to play with a quote-unquote free and strong player.
And it speaks to differences in philosophy, and there's no right or wrong way to do it depending on your personnel.
Obviously, Seattle's made it work.
Seattle's had the best defense. They've had an historic defense over the last number of years. You look at the Eagles with Bill Davis. He's a big believer in a lot of different blitz concepts, interchangeable safeties. That scheme has worked through the years for a lot of different teams. So there's different ways to play. Ultimately, that cover three, it's relatively predictable. But the flip side of that is the players can play fast because they're not thinking through concepts. They know what their assignments are. They know what their roles are, and they can play fast.
Yep, no question about it. So that's what you can expect in the secondary. Defensively, up front, I was really intrigued by their defensive front seven because – yeah, they don't have the horses right now where you can say, oh, yeah, you know, you're not fearing Vic Beasley at this stage in his career.
But he showed a little bit in the preseason.
Yeah. But in terms of a guy, you know, if you're not looking across and saying, oh, man, we have to make sure we game plan against this guy or else we're going to lose the game. You know, and but what you do have there, I think, is some depth because they were able to rotate guys in and out.
Yep.
The ones and twos, I think, are pretty close together. So they rotate those guys, much like what you see with here in Philadelphia. They rotate those guys in and out up front. A number of guys who were kind of castaways were high picks that have found a good role. You know, a Tyson Jackson, I think, you know, and Paul Soliai is a great nose tackle.
And I'll tell you a guy who I thought had a good preseason, and about 3 years ago he looked like he was going to be a really good player, was Babineau.
Yeah.
And I thought he had a good preseason because he's got the traits of an under tackle.
Yep, exactly.
He's got a lot of quickness, good size. He's a guy you theoretically have to be concerned about. He can get after the quarterback.
And they drafted Grady Jarrett to play right behind Babineau. So that'll be a guy to see develop in the years. And they got Rashid Hageman, who was a second-round pick out of Minnesota.
And
it's
very, very athletic. As you know, he went to Minnesota as a tight end.
Right. Yep, so you've got Vic Beasley, you've got Corey Bierman, who we've seen, we've talked about Bierman in the past, is just such a versatile kind of player that they play in a number of different ways. It doesn't look like we're going to see Brooks Reed, who was brought over in free agency.
Yeah, he's got the groin injury.
Yeah, so
he's
going to be out, but you look along that defensive front. We've talked in the past about Paul Warlow, you know, and just the kind of player he is. He's just a deceptively good player.
Correct. I mean, he's a guy, I remember 2 years ago when he came in, and your first thought watching him, because he's kind of stumpy, he doesn't necessarily look quick or fast, you think.
He doesn't wear gloves, so it like kind of stands out.
Right, right.
Looks, you know, he doesn't look the part necessarily.
Right, and you think, okay, they're just going to look for an upgrade at some point.
Right.
Then you keep watching this guy play, he's a pretty good player. And he's a little quicker than you think once you keep watching him.
That was what surprised me the most, was as I kept watching him, and I'm like, all right, well, this could be a guy that potentially could attack in coverage. And then I'm watching him, I'm saying, all right, well, he's playing man-to-man against tight end. He gets the ball on the ground here.
Right, right.
He sticks with the number three guy here. He sticks with the running back out of the backfield here. Like, this guy's pretty good.
And he showed a lot more range than you thought he would have. And
sure.
I spoke to my guy Casey Keeler, who coached him at Delaware. And Casey said he's all football. And, you know, you can tell watching him play that that's the way he approaches the game.
So offensively now, you look on the other side of the ball. Kyle Shanahan comes over as the offensive coordinator. What are the aspects of a Kyle Shanahan offense? We know, I think, about the stretch zone run game.
Zone run game.
That's where it's going to start.
Yeah.
Where does it go from there?
Well, then I think you get everything that works off that. And I think that Matt Ryan's a little more mobile than people think. Last year, different coaching staff, but they got him on the move by design a lot more than in previous years. It's something Matt Ryan has worked on. So you're going to see the zone run game. You're going to see play action and boot action off of that. And I guess Tevin Coleman, who did play in the last preseason game, actually had a long run. I think he'll probably – I think they would like him to win the job. Now, that may not happen week one against the Eagles, but I think they'd like him to win the job given his size and explosiveness.
The area where it will be interesting to watch for that team moving forward, and they've made a lot of changes because they brought in Andy Levitre.
I know where you're going.
They traded for Andy Levitre. They brought in Gradkowski. They're working out Jake Long. The offensive line has been – to be kind of work in progress this preseason. They've mixed pieces. They have all the different kinds of combinations where, you know, James Stone is playing center, then he's playing guard.
Yeah.
Mike Parsons playing guard, then he's playing center. Hawley's in, Hawley's out. It seems, you know, Matthews is now injured, and he's missed practice time because of a back injury at left tackle. So, you know, Ryan Schrader is at right tackle. I don't know how you feel about Schrader. Doesn't know. I don't know if necessarily if he's the perfect fit for a stretch.
No, he's not.
Scheme, so
the problem they have for the scheme and really for almost any scheme, but it's exacerbated with his own scheme, is yeah. they're not very athletic.
No, not at all.
And that's the concern. And this is an area in this game where I would expect that the Eagles could potentially dominate.
Yeah.
And if they're able to win in the run game and force the Falcons into a lot of long yardage situations, I think this is the kind of game that Bill Davis would whip out what we like to call designer blitzes, specific blitzes based on down and distance. Because I think this is an old line. First of all, they're going to be guys who have not worked together a whole lot. And they're not real, as we said, athletic.
Yep.
So when a group is not real athletic and they haven't worked together, you want to do two things. You want to make them think as the play is happening, and you want to pressure them with quicker players, linebackers, safeties, a slot corner. You want to have to make them react to speed and quickness. And I think that's what you'll see Bill Davis do, assuming they can effectively stop the run. And I think they will.
Looking at the passing game, you've got Matt Ryan, you've got Julio Jones. I think Roddy White is probably on the back end of his career at this point. But there's not much else that now that they've brought in Leonard Hankerson,
yeah.
who had played under Shanahan of Washington, was a third-round pick there out of Miami. And apparently he's had a very good camp in the preseason. He's gotten a lot of targets. He was active in the preseason. We know what he is physically. They brought in Justin Hardy from East Carolina, a guy both of us like,
yep.
a slot receiver. Devin Hester is still there and feels comfortable and is going to be a part of that offense. What do you think can be done in terms of Julio Jones, who's just one of the most physically gifted wide receivers in the NFL? What are you doing when you're looking at this pass game?
Well, I think this is where we're going to find out about Byron Maxwell and their plans for him.
Yeah.
Because do they travel Maxwell? Do they line him up over Julio Jones no matter where Julio Jones lines up?
Right.
And we're not going to know that before the game because we're not going to be told that. But if you're going to sign Byron Maxwell, who's a good-sized corner, and that's why you're bringing him in, this would seem to be the perfect game where you would travel Maxwell to match up to Julio Jones.
Yeah, no question. And you know, you look at the tight end position, they lose.
They don't have much there.
No, they don't. They lost Tony Gonzalez, obviously, to retirement. So they've got Jacob Tammy and Levine Toilolo from Stanford, who we've seen in a couple years past. Neither guy is really offering too much in the pass game right now. Both have struggled in the run game as well and sustaining the edge in the run game for that stretch scheme. So we will see what happens there with that position. But I mean, that's kind of where we're at with this Atlanta team. It'll be really interesting to see this matchup unfold on Monday night.
Yeah, and the thing you do have to be concerned about is Matt Ryan is a very professional quarterback. He's willing to stand in the pocket and deliver. He throws with great anticipation. When he's on, he's very accurate. He's resilient, so if you get to him early, that doesn't mean he's not going to come back later and make great throws. And they are capable of big plays in the pass game. So pressure becomes the key, particularly in the long yardage situations. Now, I would expect the Falcons, and I would expect Kyle Shanahan to do this, I would expect the Falcons to try to attack on first down with the pass because they get the Eagles in their base 3-4. They're not as good a pass-rushing unit from that base 3-4 as they are when they start going to their sub-packages and their different concepts. I would look for that to happen.
What I'm interested to see is looking at the matchup of this pass game versus the Eagles' pass defense is in terms of defensive packages. So we know that the Eagles were a big dime team last year. We also know that with Brandon Boykin being traded, with Ja'Cory Shepherd going down for the season, Jalen Watkins is not here anymore. So now who's going to be the nickel?
That's a great question.
And if they do go, what will they decide to do when the Falcons decide they're going to come out in 11 personnel? Would you rather have, because it's about getting your best 11 on the field,
yeah.
would you rather have Kiko Alonso and Michael Kendricks, two rangy, athletic players that can play sideline to sideline, that can play in coverage, you know, whether it's against receivers or against backs or tight ends, those two guys on the field? Or would you rather bring in E.J. Biggers? Would you rather rotate Walter Thurmond or Malcolm Jenkins down in the slot and bring in your third safety? It's going to be very, very interesting to watch.
And we're not going to be told that either.
Sure,
but,
absolutely.
You know, the issue is Julio Jones does move around the formation.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't just line up in one place.
No.
So if he lines up inside, I mean, I've seen him line up inside as the inside slot in 3-by-1 sets.
Yeah.
So he lines up all over the formation. If they don't travel Maxwell, or if they don't feel comfortable with Maxwell playing that close to the formation and they want to play man, then who plays Julio Jones?
Right, exactly. And it, one thing I watch, and we'll move off of Julio after this, is they line up with a lot of tight splits. Now, this was last year, a different staff. A lot of tight splits, and you see that.
Which backs off press. It's hard to press versus a tight split.
Because you got a two-way go.
Correct.
And with Julio, it was interesting because you're able to see him win inside, you see him win outside, and when he wins outside, lined up from a minus split, you've got so much room on the outside for Ryan to just drop that ball in a bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, it just increases that area.
And so Ryan is a turn or lose quarterback.
Yeah.
If he has man, he doesn't care who the corner is. If Julio is matched up man to man, he's going to throw it to him.
Right, exactly. So I think that's about all we got here for this matchup. Week one of college football, I got to ask you, did you catch any games this weekend?
I did. I was very anxious to see Alabama. I wanted to see Jacob Coker. And I know Alabama's offense isn't built on throwing, but I'd not really seen the kid. He hadn't played. I watched Arizona State A&M a bit. Obviously, I watched the Ohio State game because it was on Monday night.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of what other games I saw.
Well, what was your impression of Coker watching him Saturday night?
I thought he looked comfortable. I thought he left some throws on the field. They clearly wanted to attack with some shot plays that were there, and he missed those throws. There was one in particular he underthrew by 10 yards.
Right.
But I thought overall he looked comfortable throwing the ball. He had a very good arm in the intermediate area. I thought the ball did not have as much energy as I thought it would have on the deeper throws.
Interesting. And then the interesting player there, too, is you talk about Derrick Henry, who is just a monster. He was listed at 242, I believe, last year, 247, which is gigantic for a running back. And to see him move like that, my question looking at his tape a year ago, and I know you haven't gone into a full study
right.
on him, but just looking at these bigger backs, what is the big question for you when you go in to look at a bigger back? So when you watched Jeremy Hill, when you've watched some of these bigger guys come out of college, are you worried about their lack of athleticism going to the next level?
Well, you always want to look at lateral agility. I mean, look, we know Henry, even last year when he was sort of shared carries with Yeldon, and in that game when his two long runs came through where he just basically ran through holes.
Right.
And obviously he's a powerful downhill runner. What I would look for with him, and I think I would need to see this, is his lateral agility and his lateral quickness. Now, he's not going to be at the top level when it comes to lateral explosiveness, but I think you have to have some. Now, you look at someone like Eddie Lacy, another Alabama product. Now, Eddie Lacy, to me, and again, without studying Henry, and Henry has a lot more college games to play this year.
Absolutely.
Lacy strikes me as a little more agile and more urgently powerful. Not that Henry's not powerful,
right.
but Eddie Lacy runs with an urgency and a relentlessness, almost like a Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
We know that Henry is a big man, and that gives him some natural power, but just being big doesn't automatically mean in the NFL you're gonna run through people.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be interesting to see with Henry because physically, in terms of his size and just how physically imposing he is, he'll be one of the top names if he decides to come out.
I met him a couple years ago because he was the Maxwell winner for the high school player of the year nationwide.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He's a big kid. Now, this was when he was going in
right.
to his he was going to be a freshman.
18.
Yeah, he was still in high school because
right.
the Maxwell dinner is always in March. So he had just finished his – I guess he was from Yulee, Florida.
Okay.
I believe that's where he was from.
Right.
And I couldn't believe how big he was, you know, and they said he's a running back because I didn't know who he was. He's a big kid in person.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Greg Cosell, mid-season form here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll see you next week here on Chalk Talk.
Thanks, Grant.
Great finally talking about some regular season matchups here with Greg. Again, he will be here each and every week throughout the rest of the season here as we prepare for every Eagles game, talking about the opponent, talking about the Eagles, talking about the matchups, and he's all about the matchups because, BT, he watches the tape.
He watches the tape.
Exactly right. So really, really excited to have Greg here in studio each week. I really enjoy our conversations. I really enjoy the conversations also that I have with all of you out there. So whether it's on Twitter, you can follow me at FDuffy3, or if you leave a comment on our iTunes feed, on our Stitcher feed, any of our feeds, wherever you're ingesting this podcast, you can go rank us and leave us a comment. It's the best way to support us. I know, BT, that we had a ton of them last week.
We had a lot of good support from people. Wharton93 gave us some love. RLS, Layton gave us some support. And one of my favorite names, Occupy Your Mother. This is a great one. All gave us some...
It is. It is. That is a classic. That's really, really well done.
It's a good fantasy football name.
It is a very good fantasy I might steal it. So that's I really appreciate the comment and the idea for a fantasy name. So that's
But everyone gave us a lot of love, you know, gave us good suggestions. One guy told us, you know, what he did and didn't like in the podcast. And that's the type of stuff we need.
That's
what
we want.
I think people are afraid to sometimes give us criticism. But you know what? That's how we get better. That's how we create the show that you guys want or what you guys don't want. So. Give us your feedback, give us your love, and let us know what you like and what you don't like.
It's awesome. It's awesome, man. And again, I love hearing from everybody out there. The best way to support the podcast is go on and rate it. It bumps it up in the rankings in iTunes. It makes it available for more people to see and more eyeballs. The more eyeballs that we get, I guess really since we're just audio, the more ear holes we get on this podcast. We can then make it so that eyeballs get on it. We want to try and get a studio here just for our podcast. Exactly right. So that we can make this a video portion as well. I can only imagine what we'll be able to do with Greg once we get a video portion of this podcast. Once we start talking about two technique with players and making that the video portion as well. So really, really excited about what that could bring. So keep giving us your support. The best way to do that, again, go on, give us a ranking, leave us a comment, and we will keep making this podcast better each and every week. All right, let's get into two technique, excuse me. This week I talked with Eric Rowe, the cornerback, second-round pick out of Utah. Talked about press corner, what it takes to play at the line of scrimmage and disrupt early in the route. Let's get to two technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for two technique.
Here now with Eagles cornerback Eric Rowe. And Eric, I want to talk to you about press coverage today. And just the best way to kind of delay receivers from getting off the line of scrimmage. I guess first off, when you guys line up in press coverage, what is the main objective? What is the main thing that you're trying to accomplish when you line up at the line of scrimmage?
The main objective is to stay on top of him, slow his speed down. So, you know, if he's doing all that shaking at the line or if he just speed releases, you want to get a hand on. It doesn't have to be a hand just to kill him or knock him down, just to jam him, stun him so you can stay on top of the route.
So there's a difference between a one-hand jam and then there's the two-hand jam. What are the pros and cons of both? I know a two-hand jam can be really, really tricky.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a two-hand jam, you know, I kind of see it as all or nothing. If you two-hand jam him, if you can get your hands on, then you really stun him and you can really hold him at the line. But, I mean, if you miss and he swats your hands down, you lock your hips and, you know, receiver's blowing by. So you got to, you know, pick and choose when to do that. So you got to be careful with the two-hand.
What are the situations where a two-hand would you're more likely to use it as opposed to just going one hand? Because obviously that's the more common technique is the one-hand jam.
The two-hand jam, maybe if we're playing like a almost like a cover two technique where even if you miss them, you're okay because you got a safety over the top and you can just get back. But, I mean, if you're playing man, I mean, it can be good or it can be bad. So, but mainly just, you know, kind of zone techniques you want to use the two-hand.
At what point do you know in the jam that you've won, that you've done your job? Is there a point like, you know, a second, 2 seconds after we know, okay, I've done my job, I'm good here?
You can usually feel when you stun him in the chest, you can feel him move back. I mean, your job's still not done. You still got to continue the route. But if it's like a game and you stun him at the line, the quarterback's not going to look his way because it's all about timing. So, I mean, once you feel like your full hand on his chest and you feel like that stun in him, I mean, that's how you know, like, you know, you did your thing that play.
So is there one play that you can think of in your mind where you just got a guy real good at the line of scrimmage? You got him on the ground or you just completely took him out of the play?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's quite a few reps. I mean, I can recall, you know, I'm staying square with the receiver and I just stun him to where, like, he gives up on his route or – he's so far out the timing that, like, it's already over for him.
Great stuff there from Eric Rowe. Again, you can really tell that he's a student of the game. You tell he has a passion for the sport. Really, really excited about his future here. I know I highlighted a bunch of different plays from him throughout the preseason and just what he can do, both on defense and on special teams and coverage. BT, have you had any interactions so far with Eric?
Very little. He's asked me where the cafeteria was, where the bathroom was.
There you go.
I've kind of waited to put the Eagles network push on him. Just let him kind of get acclimated. A lot of things going on. You know, actually, I did talk to him when he came in for his introductory press conference for about 5 minutes and just asked him how he liked the city so far and everything. He was really nice. So.
Well, you helped him out, though. You gave him a heads up as to where the cafe
he would not have gotten any nutrition that day if it weren't for me. So that's I was right. like, hey, make a left right where you get to the T right where the cafeteria and the lobby go, and you'll be all set.
Well, you helped Eric find the cafeteria. I want to help all of you out there learn how to download and subscribe to a podcast. If you're listening to this on the Eagles app or on the website and you like what you hear, it's really, really easy. All you have to do is just go to your smartphone. Every single smartphone has it. Go to your podcast app. You just search. You go in. You search for Eagle Eye in the Sky. You hit subscribe, and now this show will download to your phone every single week. No questions asked. Whenever you want, you can listen. So you can listen in your car. You can listen at your desk at work. You can listen when you work out. You can listen when you walk your dog. Whatever you're doing, you can listen whenever you want. It's fantastic. BT was the one that put me on the podcast a few, I guess now, what are we at, BT? A couple years ago.
2 or 3 years ago.
I was not a podcast guy before. Absolutely am now. It's really the only content I listen to now is podcasts. And we have so much that we offer here. You've got this podcast. You've got the Eagles Insider podcast. The Journey to the Draft podcast is starting soon. We've got the College Draft podcast that I do with Ross Tucker at rosstucker.com, where we just talk about college draft and college football and the NFL draft and some of the top prospects to watch each week. There's a ton of great podcasting programming out there. You just have to know where to look, and it's fantastic. All you have to do is go in, subscribe, and you will get it to your phone each and every week. Let's wrap the show up like we do every week here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Let's talk some college football in Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, so I teased it earlier in the show. This week on Saturday Scouting, it's a little bit different. Usually we bring a guest in. Either we've had people in studio here. We've had Eric Galco from Optimum Scouting. We've talked with a number of different guys in studio. We've talked with people over the phone, the Tony Paulines of the world, Josh Norris, Dane Brugler, and all the rest. But this week, I felt the need to just have a nice one-on-one discussion with, again, my favorite man in the room, Brian Thomas. And BT, college football kicked off this weekend. Last week.
Exciting time of year.
Exciting time of year, no question.
Gives us football back in our lives. You know, it's introductory of real football, because there is no preseason in college football. No. So you just get right into it.
From now until February, we're set. We've got football
every weekend.
And it's great, too, because you go on like ESPNU, and they're always like replaying a game from the weekend.
Oh,
so even one that I missed.
That you might miss.
You watched the Auburn-Louisville game this weekend.
Correct, on CBS.
I did not watch it, but it was replaying.
On CBS Sports,
replaying on CBS Sports, so I got to watch it on, I believe it was Monday night. No, it would have been Sunday night. I got to watch that game and see the beginning of the game.
Good ending. Exciting ending.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Auburn jumped out to an early lead.
Yep.
Was there anybody, you watched the whole game?
I watched a good portion of the second half of the game.
Okay.
So I saw Louisville trying to come back. Now the kid's name's escaped me, but number 22 DB from Louisville.
Okay.
Really stood out in the game, had a chance to make a game-changing pick. Dropped the pick late in the game. Louisville, and I'm not a big fan of Auburn's offense. I don't know how you feel about it. Gus Malzahn, I mean, I know he's a good coach. I think he's a good leader.
Sure.
I'm not going to say it's a gimmick, but
it's all based on it's an offense.
It's all about matchups.
It's all about, they try and put their skill players in the best possible matchup to win. It's based on a lot of misdirection. So there's a lot of backfield action. You don't know necessarily who has the ball in any given play. That's why you've seen a lot of running backs. And I felt differently about certain, like, I didn't like Cameron Artis Payne at all in last year's draft at Auburn. I think he was a fourth round pick for the Panthers. I didn't like Artis Payne at all. I loved Trey Mason coming out 2 years ago from Auburn out of that same system.
Just because of running style?
Just the running style. I thought that Mason had really good vision. Cameron Artis Payne, I didn't really see that. I kind of thought that all his yardage was manufactured. So, you kind of hit or miss there, but you teased earlier that you had an A.J. Derby moment.
I do like Duke Williams, by the way.
Big possession guy.
Coates came out of there. So, I mean, exactly. I think they do well with the receivers. But
Duke Williams is, and they've got a number of other receivers there that are younger, that are stepping up as well. Williams is a guy to watch, though. Senior, we'll probably see him at the Senior Bowl this year if we're there. We're kind of hoping that we're not, because if we're in the Super Bowl, we won't be there.
But it showed me a lot that he stayed, because he could have came out last year.
He could have come out last year.
And
no,
I think the fact that he stayed to want to refine his craft and really work on his game showed me where his head was at. Now, I know guys worry about staying another year and then they draft stops, but I'm excited to see where he what he does this year and kind of you know where he projects.
Yeah, and you know you had Sammy Coates last year, and Coates' game you had the explosive speed, the ability to just get downfield. He was a 4-3 guy, and you questioned his hands. That was the big thing, was his ability to play the ball in the air. Duke Williams, it's a little bit the opposite. He's like 6'2.5", 6'3". He's about the same size as like an Alshon Jeffrey. Not an explosive guy. He can move a little bit, but he's not one of those guy, vertical receivers that's going to consistently beat defense backs over the top.
Right.
Now, he makes vertical plays because of that, the nature of that offense. They ask him to run those go routes, those deep posts, and when you have all that action, all that run action up front, you're going to put yourself in a situation where you're going to open up some things deep. But Williams is not that guy, but he does play the ball very, very well in the air.
Yep.
So you've got a different contrast in styles there. So, again, you teased it earlier. You had an A.J. Derby moment. I want to know, who was your A.J. Derby moment this year? Who was this past week there was somebody that flashed for you?
So the player's not maybe as low in the totem pole as A.J. Derby, because I felt like most people had no idea
when
I bring it up. But so I watched the Ohio State.
Sure, absolutely. Who didn't? It was
VTech game last night. And unbelievable play by Braxton Miller. I mean, I know everyone's
talking about the second play, the spin move.
The first one was great, right? But the spin move was unbelievable because there's two guys right there, and he literally just hit the B button and went. And then the celebration was just, you know, he did the LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
And he was calm. It was just
like AJ
Derby scored, and he was a 67-yard crossing route and just ran right up the sideline past everybody on Alabama. And he just scored a touchdown. It was calm. And I'm like, that was one heck of a play right there. So
sure.
Ohio State has an unbelievable team. I don't know if they're going to lose the game. I got to be honest.
This game was
Zeke
the one
Elliott,
that I pointed to. Yeah.
Zeke Elliott looks like a monster.
And he only had 11 carries, by the way.
The first two possessions of the game, I'm watching Ohio State. I'm like, are they going to give him the ball?
Yeah.
And they gave him a couple flat routes. And I'm just like, man, that's when you know you have a good offense, when you can utilize guys when you need to utilize them.
Did you see the route from Mike Thomas, the receiver, on Kendall Fuller?
Last name. He's got to be a Thomas, man. You know, I saw the route. I'm like, I remember last year he scored a touchdown in the championship game.
Yes, correct.
And I'm like, man, they got talent, because Devin Smith came out. And I'm just thinking, man, they got talent. And they kept telling me what guys were going to come, you know. And
right.
Herb Street's like, this guy's coming, that guy's coming. I'm like, Urban Meyer's one hell of a coach, man.
No question.
But I love Cardale Jones. I mean, I liked him last year. And
you're a 12-gauge guy,
I'm
huh?
a 12-gauge. I'm telling you, he's baby Roethlisberger. If I had to compare him to somebody,
That's lofty praise right there.
I really think the kid can play. I love him.
I think, you know, when I watched him, I kind of thought Cam Newton.
I might have a, I might, that, yes, you know,
yeah,
very,
very, very, very, he reminded me of Cam because.
He's a little smoother than Cam, though.
I think athletically, I
like the way he throws the ball better than
really
Cam.
He's got a really quick release.
I'm just watching that touchdown he made to,
on the corner
the freshman that got pass interference.
The first
touchdown of the game.
The first touchdown of the game.
Just where he put the ball, it was like, hey, I'm going to put where he can get it or no one else can get it.
He can sling
it. He just reads the game very well. And even when he had a couple of those, he had a run on, I think it was 3rd and 15 or something like that. He takes some hits. That's the one thing I worry about with him, is that they take hits in the game. But I think the kid can play.
I'll be very, very anxious to see. Because it was interesting. I was reading an article this morning. We're recording this on Tuesday, so the game was last night. I was reading an article this morning. JT Barrett talked after the game, said, yeah, we both, after Virginia Tech punted on the opening possession, me and Cordell, still, we didn't know who was starting. We both went to that opening huddle on the sideline, and Coach told me to go sit down.
I heard the same thing. What confused me is that they said in the broadcast that Urban Meyer brought the players in Sunday and told just the quarterbacks and no one else on the team who was going to start, and that the players had to figure out through walkthrough who was going to start. So I've heard a lot of conflicting reports.
Right.
I wonder when do they tell these guys? Like, how does – it's got to hurt your preparation to not be told.
And it's a thing, too. Like, you hear all the time that, you know, it happens in the NFL where coaches want to name their starter by the third preseason game so that they can work with the ones and kind of develop that camaraderie. Now, a college team, it works a little bit different because there's no preseason. You know, there's a shorter schedule, so it's, you know, a little bit different. But I'll be anxious to see if that holds true, if they decide to go with JT Barrett or Cardale Jones over JT Barrett for the remainder of the season. Was it just a thing over Virginia Tech? Because you saw the way Virginia Tech played Ohio State a year ago. how much did that play into the decision where you have like a dynamic running threat that's just so hard to bring down in the open field? You have so much more to worry about defensively with Jones back there as opposed to Thomas. I don't know. I've watched both guys. I've studied both guys. I can see why a coach would want JT Barrett over Cardale Jones, but I can see from a scout's perspective, Jones is just so much more intriguing.
I'm predicting Jones further, not necessarily where he's at now, but JT Barrett is a way more versatile quarterback than what Cardale Jones is. But what stood out to you this weekend from what you watched?
You know, I was at the Penn State Temple game. It was unbelievable.
Dude, I watched that game too. That defense is redonkulous.
Well, here's the thing, and the defense is great. I wrote about it on Saturday Scouting on PhiladelphiaEagles.com this past week. It was the number one matchup I was focused on because I knew I was going to the game. So it was the matchup I knew I was going to get an up-close look at. That Temple defense, they're full of seniors. You've got a senior corner in Tavon Young. You've got Tyler Matakevich, who has been as productive as any linebacker in the country over the past 3 years, has been super, super productive. You've got some guys up front, Hershey Walton, Matt Ioannidis, Nate Smith. You know, there are these guys that they've got some older players there. They didn't even have one of their best pass rushers in Prince Martin Aguique, so who was actually there when I was there.
Great
so
name.
He's been there for a while. But, you know, they've got a senior-laden defensive front. The Penn State offensive line was just a disaster.
And there was a kid, 73, transfer.
Paris Palmer,
he looked awful.
Temple
didn't stop blitzing him. It's like they were doing is blitzing up the A-gap.
Well, no, and even late in the game, the one sack that they got, it was a two-man rush.
Yes.
It was a two-man rush, and they got to win. And they got, it's not even like it was like a coverage sack. Like, you know, I'm sure the coverage was fine. I couldn't tell because I was on the field, but it was a two-man rush. And I mean, Hackenberg was pressured as soon as he hit the top of his drop.
Dude, it certainly gets in your head the whole, what's Carr's brother's name?
David Carr. Getting hit over and over, no question.
You put your back, your third, you get your that third step, your back foot dropped, and you just see color. And it's like, he was getting to the point where he would get to the top of his drop.
And he was
waiting for pressure to come, and he had nowhere to go. So, I mean, he couldn't even step up in the pocket. So.
Right.
I mean, I give a lot of credit to that. I mean, Brock Horde was loving the Temple defense and said he thinks in his mind it's a top 10, top 15 defense in the country this year.
Wow. Well, that's really high praise. So, I mean, the big thing, though.
I mean, Hackenberg is definitely a pro prospect. I mean,
he's
by far going to be a top three quarterback picked. I mean, if not the first.
Look, in my eyes, yes. But I will say this. I felt very strongly that Zach Mettenberger was a top three quarterback the year he came out.
And
for other reasons now, he tore his ACL. There were some off-field concerns. You know, but he fell to the sixth round and went to Tennessee. I've had this discussion with Greg on this podcast. If Zach Mettenberger had gone in the second round and had the year that he had last year, no, they would not have taken Marcus Mariota. They wouldn't have taken Mariota number two because they would have said, "Oh, we got a young second-round pick," right. And he would have been Derek Carr. Everyone thought Derek Carr is like this great piece. There's no way that Oakland would take a quarterback because they've got Carr there. If Mettenberger had been a second-round pick instead of a sixth, we'll see if that had changed. But back to Hackenberg, I see a lot of those similar tools: big, strong arm, the ability to make throws that very, very few quarterbacks can make. He throws with anticipation. He was accurate in terms of delivering the ball. Now, there were times where he was very inaccurate, very erratic, and that was, in my mind...
Does that scare you?
To me, it was more of his feet. And his feet, whether it was the pressure, whether it was, you know, he had to roll out and his feet were all jacked up. He would go to throw the ball sometimes, and his feet would be pointed as if he was throwing to the left, and he's trying to make a throw all the way to the right. When your throwing platform, when your base is that screwed up and that skewed, BT, you know, you've been golfing with me numerous times, and you're constantly pointing at
my feet.
It's
all about the aim, Fran.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
All about what you're. But if I get what you're saying, if you're rolling out to your right and you want to throw back left, but your whole body is facing to the right,
it's not going to be an accurate throw.
It's not going to be a good throw.
And he would be that way sometimes, not even rolling, just even in his drop. And that's something
that's
scarier, and a lot of coaches the people that I've asked, have said, oh yeah, that's something that we can work through and you can fix that. But the idea, the shell-shocked mentality of
that
being
scared,
that's a scary thing.
Well,
I
watched the last couple series. I think it was about 3 minutes left in the game. And they went for it on fourth down. They were in their own territory.
Yep, sure.
It was like 4th and 15. They certainly had to go for it because they were down two possessions. And it was a, you know, he had gotten sacked the last, the previous two plays on 2nd and 3rd down. 4th down, the player was open. They were probably 3 or 4 yards short of the first down. But he just airmailed it. And yep. There's a cameras on him. He's coming off and he's just screaming. He's frustrated.
Yeah.
And not that I expect every player to make every throw, but when he really started to get frustrated in that game, it really started to weigh on him.
Yeah.
And those are the things I think that coaches sometimes look at. And yeah, you didn't have a great game. Yeah, you guys weren't going to beat Temple. But not maximizing every possession, it really started to seem like he really started to drop in confidence, which I understand. Does confidence breed success or does success breed confidence?
But look at you.
Hey, where's Bo's wisdom music?
That's right.
But I like him as a prospect, but he scared me just watching his
the body language.
Maybe his body language and his maturation kind of.
That's going to be a big topic of discussion.
And he's too old, in my opinion, to maybe be acting like that. But,
yeah.
You know, not to get
we'll
over
see.
But
sure.
It's a tough game. I mean, Temple's defense really brought it, and it's, you know, you don't block for your quarterback. I don't know what you're going to expect to happen.
It's going
to
be tough sledding because obviously we've talked about how strong the Temple defensive front is, but what are they going to do when they play Michigan State and Shalique Calhoun or Ohio State and Joey Bosa? You know, any of these defensive fronts that they're going to be going against in the Big Ten, you know, Michigan's got some pass rushers. Indiana, I think, has some pass rushers coming back this year. You've got Jahad Ward for Illinois. They've got some pass rushers on the schedule for the rest of the year. They're going to have to learn how to protect Hackenberger, whether it's from a coaching perspective and trying to rely more on the run game or just create opportunities for Hackenberger to get the ball out quicker, or if it's on Hackenberger. Again, being on the field, it was really, really tough for me to see exactly who was at fault on all these sacks. Obviously, there were some where it was pretty clear left tackle got beat and you got beat clean off the ball. But they're going to have to figure out some kind of way, or otherwise, I mean, Hackenberg's just not going to be in a position to succeed. But really good stuff, BT, from Saturday Scouting.
By the way, Everett Golson looks awesome. But it was Texas State.
It was Texas State.
Let's
pump the brakes.
Florida State quarterback, but
we'll see. We'll see. That'll be interesting. That'll be a topic discussion later on because I'm not a huge Everett Golson guy. But we'll see. But thanks again for everybody. So you've got Greg Cosell, Eric Rowe, great stuff once again. Thanks again for BT for producing the show, keeping this thing going. And then we've got, obviously, our guest here on Saturday Scouting. You can follow me on Twitter at FDuffy3. Follow our at Eagle Shows account as well on Twitter. Go on, interact with us. You know, send us what you think. Check out all of our content. All the podcasts go up there. My Eagle Eye in the Sky article goes up on my Twitter page as well. So thanks again to everybody who was on the show this week. Whether you're listening on PhiladelphiaEagles.com or the mobile app, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Spotify, wherever you're listening, go and give us a comment. Rate the show. We'll keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that's going to do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For BT, I'm Fran Duffy. I'll talk to you next week.